Okay, well, I have that it's at the top of the hour, and so let me get started in welcoming everyone to our teleseminar. As I said, this is the teleseminar on Helping the Struggling Reader with Dr. Bethany Tucker, so you want to make sure that you're in the right place, and we welcome you. Have you ever wondered how to reach the student who struggles so hard to read? Bethany is going to talk with us today about strategies that appeal to and help the struggling reader. This teleseminar will highlight a couple of strategies for comprehension, vocabulary development, and multisensory approach for teaching decoding. Teachers who have used this strategy describe it as fast and fun. I've seen Bethany present this, and I just think, oh my gosh, I wish I had known about this when my kids were learning how to read, because it certainly would have helped, especially my son. During the call, if you think of a question, please just email it to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. As I mentioned earlier, we have a large crowd today, and so we've muted all the lines so everyone can hear Dr. Tucker. But if you've got any questions, please do send them to us, and at our question and answer period, which will be about 1/4 of the hour, I will ask Dr. Tucker, I will forward those questions to Dr. Tucker. I know everyone's time is valuable, and so I want to get right into introducing our speaker today. Dr. Bethany Tucker is from North Carolina, as she said, so she is not used to driving in snow, and she has been a professional educator since 1972. She has served as a classroom teacher, a resource teacher, a teacher of gifted students, program coordinator, and grant fund project director, and she's currently a professor of education at Everett University in Danville, Virginia. While teaching at Everett, she researched and developed Tucker signing strategies for reading, a decoding method using sight, sound, and movement that has been highly successful with struggling readers nationwide and in some foreign countries. Through AHA Process, Dr. Tucker provides training and consulting services for how to motivate students for increased performance, for reading skills, for a framework for understanding poverty, learning structures, and under-resourced learners. An experienced consultant, Dr. Tucker has presented numerous workshops for AHA Process since the year 2000. If you'd like more information on what Bethany is talking about today, please just email us or call us at 800-424-9484, or you can send questions or for more information at questions@ahaprocess.com. Also, Bethany is available for consulting and workshops at your school. So, without further ado, Bethany, please take it away.
Thank you, Stephanie. Actually, I heard your intro to the point where you said 1972, and from that point on, I was thinking, oh, my goodness, that was a long time ago. But I have been teaching since 1972. And as Stephanie said, we'll talk very briefly about a strategy that I created, but we'll talk about it very generally, and we will talk about the teaching of reading in general. In order to thoroughly and completely cover my signing strategy, we would need several hours, plus we would need to be able to see one another. But we can talk generally about how it fits into the whole picture of teaching reading to struggling readers. To start off, whenever I start reading the research about teaching reading, the first words that I encounter are phonological awareness, fluency, comprehension, decoding, word analysis, etc. And these are important concepts. However, for your struggling reader, if we start here, we have missed a crucial step. And Ruby Payne's work helps us to understand what this first step is all about. Struggling readers live in a concrete world. Reading is abstract. And when we simply start in talking about word sounds and reading with expression, some of our students, especially those from poverty, really don't connect. They don't understand what these concepts of squiggly marks, very abstract concepts, are all about. And Dr. Payne helps us to understand that the first step must be creation of an understanding of the purpose of language arts. And when I work with children, I accomplish that this way. I will say to the children, I have thoughts in my head, and these are thoughts that I want to share with you. You can't read my thoughts. Of course, I don't ask them if they can read my thoughts, because they'll say, yes, I can. So I simply say, you cannot read my thoughts. And I will say, I want to communicate my thoughts to you, and how can I do this? I can do this three ways. First of all, I can act them out. I can pantomime, and you can guess what I'm thinking. That is one way to communicate what we're thinking. Another way is with words. I can tell you my thoughts. And the third way is to write them down. And then we go on to explain that other people have thoughts they want to share with us as well. People have thoughts they want to share with me. And when they do, I watch them act out their thoughts, or I listen to them tell me what they're thinking, or I read what they have written down. And that is all that language arts are all about. It's all about communicating. And the decoding strategies, etc., are simply tools that we can use to try to understand what people are telling us. They're tools to help us to understand what these our friends have written down on paper. And that's what the reading process is all about. And these processes, these tools, are broken down into phonological awareness, fluency, etc. When we talk about fluency, for example, when children understand that the reason we're reading is to understand somebody else's thoughts, then they understand why fluency is important. If someone said to us, "Look out, a rock is falling on your head," they probably wouldn't be thinking it that way. They would be thinking, "Look out!" So children can understand that when they try to read with expression, they're trying to read the words the same way the other person is thinking them. So this makes the reading process very concrete for our students from poverty. So step number one in working with students from poverty in the area of reading is to help them to understand the purpose of language arts, rather than just starting right in with the structure and the patterns, which is what we typically do. Excuse me. Phonological awareness is all about sounds. It does carry over into writing, but when we talk about sound awareness, we're talking about words that we hear. And there are games that we can use with children. Some of these games are effective with students from poverty, some are not. Of course, students from poverty love to play games, as all children do. But relationship building is very, very important to children from poverty. So they prefer cooperative rather than competitive games. There are many good games, and I would use them in the classroom, but for struggling readers, I would be sure to include many cooperative games. And there are games that require the students to be able to self-monitor. And students who are struggling in reading often cannot self-monitor their reading skills. So we need to be sure that if we have children to play games, then there is an adult nearby to monitor their progress rather than just turning them loose as a whole class room full of children and expected them to benefit from the game, because research tells us that some of our more affluent students will benefit, but our struggling readers typically will benefit much less, if at all. But there are games that we can play with children that are appropriate for the whole class. For example, we can ask riddles. We can review the concepts of onset, which is the first sound in a word, and the rhyme, which is the last group, the last part of the word, and together the onset and the rhyme make a word. So we can explain that when they're put together, they do make a word, and we can say, "Now, I have a riddle. I'm thinking of something. It begins with M, and it rhymes with rice." And the children would, of course, hopefully be able to tell us that the answer to the riddle is mice. This is the type of game and activity that children from poverty enjoy. Another game that we can play with the whole class, and again, for your students from poverty, it's important to have games for the whole class rather than just turning them loose on their own, is a memory game. Most of you all who haven't been teaching since 1972 probably are too young to remember the match game, but you can have rhyming words. You go over the words on the card, then turn the words over. With Velcro, you can stick them on the board and have children try to remember the words and the rows and the column that rhyme. And this is teaching graphing and directionality and other skills as well. Okay. Another component of decoding, phonological awareness, word skills, is that of syllabication. And one very simple activity is to just give children chips, and they move a chip for every syllable that they hear. If you call out the word today, they move a chip for two, a chip for day. They will say that word has two syllables. And then we can add to the game by making silly words. We can move the two chip and put it behind day. And we have a silly word, day, too. But this is helping students to retain sounds. Again, many of you are likely too young to remember the name game. Larry, Boberry, FIFA, Boberry. That was a very popular song back in the 60s, I think. And you might want to look this up and play it with children because it's helping them to put sounds together in a way. We can chant sounds. We can say it begins with P, it ends with N. Put them together, they say pen. Children enjoy chants as well. An activity that I read recently that I thought was really cute, and cute counts when it comes to practicing words, is to give children a little smiley face sticker. They put the sticker on their thumb. When you call out a word, for example, you might ask them to show you thumbs up if the word starts with S. So children will have a little smiley face on their thumb, and they will give you a thumbs up if they hear an S at the beginning of the word. Again, some of these strategies don't really teach the skill, but they reinforce the skill, and reinforcement is important. And if the reinforcement can be fun, all the better. Other words, they can write down as many words with the same ending as they can in 30 seconds, and then they tally and count their words. They can change one letter and make new words. There are many games that we could play, but the key points are that our students who struggle with reading benefit more from whole group activities and from cooperative activities than from competitive ones. Now, speaking of comprehension, I want to talk for just a second about sign language. And the strategy that I developed is a system of hand signs, but that's not what I'm talking about now. What I'm talking about now is American Sign Language. And American Sign Language demonstrates one of those three ways that we can communicate. We can communicate with other people. We can share our thoughts by acting them out. And sign language, in a sense, does this because sign language is very heavily iconic. And sign language, teaching young children American Sign Language, has many, many benefits. Now, if you're looking for a preschool program or a kindergarten, first grade, extracurricular activity or a summer program, I can think of absolutely nothing more beneficial than teaching sign language. They love it, for one thing, but research tells us that children who learn American Sign Language and use it do better in school across the board, especially in the area of reading comprehension. And we can understand why this would happen because, as I said, sign language is iconic. So if I sign the man ran, I am signing meanings. I'm signing icons so that children then transfer this to reading. And when they read the man ran, they're signing it in their heads and they attach meaning to it. So sign language is just very, very effective. Not only that, but when parents and children learn sign language together, there's a deepened bond between the child because it would be almost impossible for me to talk with you through sign language without looking at you and looking you in the eyes. And children who communicate with caregivers through sign language develop more self-confidence, et cetera, because of this deepened bond. Concerning comprehension and vocabulary, for students from poverty, for students who struggle, vocabulary absolutely must be presented ahead of time, both in read-alouds and in their own reading, for several reasons. First of all, Ruby Payne talks quite a bit about Feuerstein and how Feuerstein discovered that students from poverty are under-mediated students. They might be from poverty, they might be middle class or from wealth, but under-mediated students sometimes fail to see things in their environment. In fact, as research tells us, and other researchers tell us, that some of these students will miss up to 50% of what is in their environment. And they view the world by scanning rather than looking. So what this means is that those children will read, if we have the gear, drop everything and read time, our middle class or our adequately mediated students are benefiting from this, but your inadequately mediated students are simply skipping over the words they don't know. In fact, they can finish reading a chapter. You'll show them a word from the chapter and ask them if they saw that word, and they'll say no. And they didn't. They didn't because they don't know how to focus on things in their environment. So Ruby has some activities in her work, that one of which she calls word knowledge, and it just points out how we should give children a list of words from their reading ahead of time. They look at the words and they simply put a check in the appropriate column as to whether or not they've seen the word, they know it, they don't know it, they don't have a clue. And we need to say to the children, you know, it doesn't matter if all of your checks are in the last column. It doesn't matter if you have no clue about any of those words. That's not important. This is not for a grade. But I want you to look at the words and think about them. So this increases the possibility that when they do actually start reading, they will at least see the words. And if they at least see the words, then hopefully they'll be able to use contextual clues and decode the words. So when we think about comprehension, sign language, and vocabulary, and especially presenting that vocabulary ahead of time, is very important for them. Of course, as they read, we think about the W's of the story, who, when, where, what problems, etc. And some of these strategies, such as this, talking about the W's of the story, are just as beneficial for our students who struggle as they are for other students, and sometimes more so. Now, another category of activities that we see frequently for all readers is that of graphic organizers. Ruby adds to this concept that of mental models. Graphic organizers and mental models benefit many students, but they are absolutely crucial for our students from poverty because, once again, they live in a very concrete world. And giving them graphic organizers and story maps and mental models help them to understand the content in a very, can help them to understand abstract concepts. For example, they can be very simple. We can simply give them a sheet of paper, ask them to fold it in half and fold it twice again lengthwise, and in the first rectangle they write the title and the author, and the next one they write the characters, etc. These are things that you do if you teach reading. We're talking about them now because we're simply pointing out how crucial they are for our students from poverty. Now, when we talk about decoding, we need to, again, explain to the students that someone had thoughts that they wanted to share with us, so they wrote those thoughts down. They couldn't act them out because we weren't there, and they couldn't tell us because we weren't there, but they could write them down. And if we are to understand what they wanted to tell us, we must be able to read the words. And in order to read the words, we must be able to decode them. This is where the strategy that I developed a number of years ago fits in. And as Stephanie said, the key words are fun and fast, because some children, as you know, might remember the associated sound for the letter T on Monday, but on Tuesday they don't have a clue. And what I did was to develop a system of 44 hand signs. The children learn the signs for the consonant, vowel, short vowels, long vowels, diphthongs, digraphs, and they learn them very, very quickly because this is a second language, and children learn second languages twice as fast as adults. So we teach them the hand signs in just a matter of hours, and I'm talking about 15-minute intervals. When we put them together in a few hours, they've learned the signs, and then they can use the signs independently to read words. This is one concern I have when I go through material and I read strategies for working with children. Many of them are excellent strategies if the child has someone to help him or her. But some of our children who are struggling also lack mediators at home, and we need to find strategies that they can use independently. And that is the very reason that I developed Tucker signing strategies, because I was working with student teachers, and we were very concerned over children who had no help at home. And in the tobacco fields of Virginia, that we had them for 3 months, and they were gone. So we wanted a strategy that they could take with them and use forever. And what we discovered by following children across the country was that once they learn the signs, then they can use those hand signs independently as long as they need to. So these were part of the reasons that I put the hand signs together. Now, I don't have the time, even if we have any visual backup, to go over the 44 hand signs, but I want you to be aware of them in case you want to learn more about them. You can just go to the AHA process website, and I give you my personal guarantee that they will help some of your students, and if they don't, then I'll give you your money back for this session, since it was free. How about that? Okay? Now, in terms of decoding, there are other activities that we can do, and we can build words with blends, activities such as giving the students sticky notes, and one sticky note will contain the letter S, for example, another the letter T, and then this final one will contain the word base, and we let them create words by putting sticky notes together. This, again, is very, very helpful for your struggling readers because it's concrete. These little pieces of paper are very concrete objects which they can manipulate and handle, and the object of this game would be for the students to use all of their sticky notes and create as many words as they possibly can. Okay, I realize that I'm talking fast. I'm trying to get as much into this hour as I possibly can. I will stop in about 20 minutes and field your questions, but in the meantime, we'll talk just a little bit about fluency. And again, when we start talking with students about fluency, we need to go back to the purpose of language arts. The purpose of language arts is to share our thoughts, to communicate with other people. And if someone, again, says, watch out, a rock is falling on your head, if we don't read it the way they intend it, then we have lost part of the meaning, and we want to retain the meaning of the other person's thoughts. That's what fluency is all about. And when we read about fluency, we see the words speed or rate and accuracy and expression, intonation, stress, pauses. And the key words that we encounter when we teach fluency are read and reread. One of the most effective ways to teach fluency is to have students reread a passage that is at their instructional level. And we know that if they can read a passage or text with 97 to 100% accuracy, then it is at their independent, I said instructional, I meant independent level, and it's appropriate for fluent reading. Now, with your students from poverty or your struggling readers, and many times these two categories do overlap, but they're not exclusive, with your struggling readers, many of these students, especially the ones from poverty, enjoy music and songs and art. Again, it's very concrete. So if we can find songs that they like and type out the words, play the songs, and have them follow the words with their finger, track the print, this is highly effective for some of your struggling readers. We can also, once again, model reading with speed and accuracy. We read a sentence and ask them if it sounds natural, ask them if it sounds like what the person might have been thinking. And then we can ask them to read with speed and accuracy as well. Students also enjoy timed reading. We can simply have them, as this implies, read a passage and time themselves. And this is the type of activity that your struggling readers, especially those from poverty, enjoy doing with a partner, because it is not competitive, it is cooperative. And they love a timer as well. So if Jane has a timer and John is reading, Jane times John. She times him again the next day, and the purpose, of course, is for him to read in less time. Now, an addition to this that children really enjoy is to graph their speed. And, of course, hopefully the graph will show improvement. not only can they graph their speed, but they can also graph the number of words that they have, that they can read in a particular length of time. Your students from poverty will very much enjoy this. And this is motivational because this activity has them competing against themselves. And all I've been reading quite a bit lately on motivation, and all of the research tells us that if we want to motivate students, we encourage activities that have them competing against their own time, competing against their own performance rather than the performance of other people. And this is especially true for your struggling readers because they have been pitted against other people and they always seem to come out on the bottom. So by struggling to or competing against themselves, then they can see progress. And this is very, very motivational for them. It also gives them a sense of autonomy. One of the number one motivators is to give students control over their lives. And with your struggling readers, the more you can allow them to choose their own reading material, the more motivated they will be. In addition, many researchers tell us that your students from poverty and your struggling readers should be introduced to humor early on. If you are deciding between two books and one has a great deal of humor in it, if you will choose the one that has humor in it, your struggling readers likely, many of them, will relate to it. And this is particularly true of your students from poverty because humor is a survival skill in poverty. I use humor to alleviate stress. There is often stress in poverty, and some of our children use humor as a survival skill. So when we interject humor into our classrooms, whether it's through literature or through other sources, then this can help us to connect with our students from poverty. After students have practiced reading, they can record themselves. When they feel that they're ready, they can record themselves. We can put their cassette in a zipper bag, and it can be made available to other students. And again, they can be very proud of this because another motivator is that of self-efficacy. If any of you ask me to help you with the project that you're doing, if I didn't feel that I had the capability of doing what you needed for me to, I would run in the other direction. I would not be motivated to do any part of it. And the same is with our students. If we want to motivate them to read, just let them feel that they have conquered a paragraph, conquered a sentence, conquered a paragraph, conquered a book, and there's nothing more motivational than letting them choose, interjecting humor, letting them become fluent. So developing fluency is important not just for comprehension, but also for helping students to feel motivated as well. We can play games such as bingo. Again, this can be a whole group activity, and our struggling readers relate more effectively to whole group activities, and they simply cover up words that we call out. Now, you can have students work with partners to correct one another, and this would be a time that you might want to pair one of your more advanced readers with your struggling reader to play bingo so that they can help one another. But this has to be done very carefully, otherwise the more advanced reader does the work, and that's not what we want. Partners can be used also to just read back and forth to one another, and the partner who is not reading keeps track of the words that were read correctly, incorrectly. This can be very motivational as well. Okay? We talked very briefly earlier about sign language and how it helps with comprehension. Sign language, and this, again, is talking about American Sign Language, also improves vocabulary. And vocabulary teaching is crucial for fluency because some of your students from poverty simply have not heard a large number of words in their lives. In fact, Ruby Payne's, some of the research that she shares from Hart and Risley points out that an average, a typical child from poverty by the age of four will have heard 13 million words, and these are words directed at them. The same age child from middle class will have heard 48 million words. You might have heard the interview with Hardin Risley on NPR about a month ago. It was absolutely fascinating. But they talked about how a person would develop cognitively when people are actually looking at them and talking to them. They not only acquire a vocabulary, but their reading skills develop, because if I am not familiar with how words in my language sound, then I am hesitant to try to say those words when I'm reading. So it's very important for our students to simply hear words. It is true that we want them to have opportunities to talk, but it is more important that they have opportunities to hear us, and to hear us talk in general, and to hear them talk directly to us. Once again, American Sign Language can help students to develop vocabulary, but it can also help them to pay better attention, because if we sign their vocabulary words, they're looking at us. They have to look at us in order to see the signs, so they learn to focus and to pay better attention. We can play subtraction concentration. There are other concentration type games that we can play. But in about 7 or 8 minutes, we will take question time, but I think I'll stop here and very quickly review the components that we've talked about. First of all, we do want to be concerned about fluency, comprehension, decoding with our struggling readers. But talking about the purpose of language arts must precede that. They can't deal with abstractions because they live in a very concrete world. The decoding skills, et cetera, are simply skills that we learn to help us to understand what other people are trying to tell us. Phonological awareness, decoding are all skills that we'll want to address. Now, I touched just very, very briefly on Tucker signing strategies, and I have just a minute or two to go back to that. I mentioned the fact that we developed 44 hand signs, and children can learn these hand signs very quickly. These hand signs are fun, and this is another component that makes this work for struggling readers, because we have a sign, for example, for long E and short E. If you curl the fingers of your left hand, you can see that the letter E magically appears, and that's what we do for children. Then we'll say, now stretch your arm out nice and long and say E. And now contract your arm so that it's short and say eh. And this is a fun and fast way for children to learn long and short vowel sounds. There is a sign for our controlled vowels, and we all know that for some children, we might spend weeks or months teaching our controlled vowels. There's one sign for I-R-E-R-U-R. It's an upward spiral. We show it to the children. They get it. They remember it. Typically, most children will remember that sign after one demonstration, and they think it's funny. And if you write the word shirt on the board and ask, what questions do you have, or what signs do you see, rather, they will see shirt first. And this is important because sometimes without the signs, they'll see individual letters, S-H-I-R-T, shirt. And that, of course, is hard to blend into a word. So the signs can help with some of these additional skills that we're concerned about teaching. We're also concerned about teaching consonant, vowel, consonant, silent E words and the vowel rules. The signs can make the teaching of these rules more fun. There's a sign, I mentioned the sign for long E, short E, but there's also a sign for silent E. You simply cover that E up with your other hand. And young children think this is really, really fun. Now, I keep saying young children. I have used the signing strategy with middle graders and with adults. And the wonderful part of working with middle graders is that they, first of all, can learn the signs in just a few minutes. And once the signs are learned, then often some of the children can become independent learners very quickly. okay? I know I've talked really, really fast. Rather than waiting 10 more minutes, Stephanie, could I stop to see if there are questions at this point?
Absolutely. You can stop whenever you need to, Bethany. But no, I don't have any questions at this point, but let me just remind our audience that if you do have any questions, please email those to us at questions, with an S on the end, questions@ahaprocess.com. And we will forward those to Bethany so that she can answer your questions. I'm glad that you touched on the fact that these strategies are good for adults as well, because I was thinking that might be something that people want to know about.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. And I sometimes fail to talk enough about working with older people. A few years ago, I worked in the same room with Dr. Lombaugh, who wrote the Lombaugh Reading System for adults, and it was great fun to work with him because together he and I worked with struggling adults, and we taught them to read, and it was just really, really exciting. In fact, I taught some of the hand signs to one woman who was 40-something, and after she read a few words, she jumped up and down, and she was so excited. She said, "Now I can read to my grandchildren." So that made it all worthwhile. But the bottom line is this. Regardless of whether a person is 3 or 93, if that person can't read a particular word, we often need to go back and revisit some of the same strategies with them. And this is one thing that Dr. Payne points out. Some of our students who are under-mediated don't know how to, well, they don't have certain skills. For example, some of them do not know how to plan. And if we have a student who does not know how to plan, the student also does not know how to plan the attack of a word. And we teach them the skills, but then they still don't know where to start. So with the signing strategy, we simply say, "Sign it. If you don't know the word, sign it for me." And it gives them a place to start. So it does help students to develop some of these missing input strategies, cognitive skills that Ruby talks quite a bit about. And some of these strategies address the area of...
I still don't have any questions.
Okay, so I'll just keep talking then. Just let me know when you do, because what I did was to go through everything and just hit the highlights in case we did have a lot of questions, but now I can go back and fill in some of the gaps that I left. I talked just a little bit about motivation, and what we need to realize is that middle-class people typically think that every child wants to learn to read, but the reality is that some of our students are actually made fun of at home for reading, and this sounds bizarre, but I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen on a personal level. And children go home and read, and they're made fun of. And one thing that we must do is to help them to develop a sense of self as a reader, because some of them don't have that sense of self. And what we need to do is to have them draw a picture of themselves reading a book and help them to realize that this can be their possible self. Because some of our students have heard, well, you'll never do well. You'll never be able to read. I can't read, so you won't be able to read. So their self-image, their future self, becomes that of a non-reader. So this whole sense of self and self-efficacy are very, very important in terms of motivation. And frequently, students who are struggling decided early on that they lack the competency that they need in order to read. A motivated person has a sense of self-efficacy and also a sense of competency. And if we say to students, do you know what, the strategies that I am teaching you will help you to become a good reader, then this can help them to develop that self, that sense of competency that is often lacking in their lives. We're still okay?
Yes, honey.
Yes.
I've got a question for you now.
Okay.
Someone wrote in and said, "I work at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and many of our bigs have littles that really struggle with reading. Bigs are constantly asking for suggestions on how they can help their littles with their reading. A high percentage of our littles do come from poverty, where English is their second language. They're wondering what kinds of activities can be done outside of the school setting to help complement what a struggling reader is getting in school.
Oh, that's an excellent question. And about 1,000 answers come to mind. I am working with a Big Brother Big Sister program in Little Rock. And what we are doing, and again, I'll start with my signing strategy because I know it better than any other strategy. But what we are doing, we have a DVD on which I teach each of the signs in the context of a word. And we are having the bigs and littles watch the DVD together and then practice together. And this is important because it would be extremely difficult for my husband, for example, to teach reading. He doesn't know what teaching reading is all about, and just as I don't know about his job of insurance. So we put these tapes together for people who are simply not in the field of education, as would be the case with many bigs. And with the tapes, people can simply watch the hand signs together, learn them together, and practice them. Now, one of the most important things that a Big Brother Big Sister can do is to help that student to develop fluency with any reading material. Let them choose their book. It's okay to read the book to the child over and over and over, because once again they need to hear the words. So just reading the same material several times and letting the child choose a sentence. Start with just a sentence. I want you to learn to read this one sentence, and the next time I read the book, you will read that sentence. And then you can say, well, let's make it two sentences for you. And you do a shared reading such as this. And once again, the secret in working with struggling readers is to realize that they have experienced a large number of failures, and to find one book and help them to feel really, really good about that one book is an excellent, excellent start. People who want to be Big Brothers, Big Sisters really don't need to worry about whether or not they are familiar with phonological awareness, comprehension, fluency, all of these skills. That's okay. Just reading together, gradually, incrementally turning control of the book over to the child. Let the child read one word the first day. Let them read a sentence the next, two sentences the next, until the child can read the whole book. And let that be a very, very special book between the two of you. That alone can help that child to feel a sense of self-efficacy. I really appreciate that question. I could go on and on with it, but I'll stop to see if you have others first.
I do have more questions.
Okay.
The next question is, how exactly do you utilize the bingo with your struggling readers?
Okay, thank you for that question. I would pair students to work together. I would give them the bingo cards, and I would pair the struggling reader with a more advanced reader. I would call out a word, and of course the children just cover the word if they have it on their card. So if a struggling reader does not recognize that word, the child's buddy could help him or her. And I realize that that this isn't exactly the child reading the word independently, but at least the child has seen the word one more time. And then if I call the word stop, for example, and the child covers it up with help, I could say the letter P at the end of the word stop. It's a clue for you. That was a clue for you, wasn't it? So we can play bingo, pair the children, and still teach reading at the same time.
Great. Okay, our next question is, a person says, I was trained in Tucker Signing years ago. How can the program be introduced to my new school?
Oh, that's a great question. I would love to know where this person is from. If he or she could add that to the email, I would love to know this. I have seen this happen in a number of ways. I conducted a workshop in South Dakota about a year ago that was just such fun, simply because one teacher had purchased the manual, had studied it, had used it with her students, her entire classroom. Her colleagues saw the results, and asked her, what are you doing? And she shared what she knew, but then she said, let's just have a workshop for everybody. So they did, and then everybody was on board. The workshop is the best approach. I'm not saying that a school can't implement a strategy without a workshop. We certainly can. But the buy-in school-wide is so very important, because if the majority of the teachers in a particular school are all teaching the same hand sign for IR, for example, it becomes part of the culture. And what I have seen, I've seen physical education teachers, for example, saying, okay, let's warm up by signing long E shorty, long O short O. And they are supporting what is being done in the classroom. So I know this wasn't a very good answer to that question, but basically one teacher or a small group of teachers can use the manual and make it work. I have seen it happen many times. When the strategy usually becomes part of the school culture as a result of a workshop. An individual could make that happen, certainly, but the workshop just makes it so much faster.
So, well, and I will forward that information in case you want to give this person some more details.
I would love to, and I know I'm talking over you, but I do want to add that when I conduct a workshop, I ask the client to identify and to bring in some of his or her own struggling readers, and I demonstrate the strategy with those children right there at the school. And then it's impossible for one teacher to say, well, I don't think this will work. We won't do it, because it has been demonstrated that it can work with children.
Wonderful. Well, the next question is, what are your suggestions for middle school students that are struggling readers?
That's a really good question. Now, when we say struggling readers, we can be talking about either word recognition or comprehension. If we're talking word recognition, again, I apologize for going back to Tucker Signing Strategies, but, you know, I do it because it works better than anything else I have found. If I found something else that would work better, I would drop it and say, hey, let's quit this. Let's use the other. But I haven't found that other. So if it's a matter of decoding, I would use the signing strategy. Now, with middle graders, obviously, it works better to pull students out and teach them the signs, because they wouldn't want to be singled out and be forced to sign an upward spiral for IR in front of their peers when their peers don't have to do that. But with small groups and one-on-one, I would use the signing strategy for decoding. And I would use it because, obviously, other strategies have been tried and they didn't work. And these students need something different. Not only do they need different, but they need fun. So I would use this because it is so different. It's a totally different approach. It's multimodal. And if other things that we have used haven't worked, why try them again? Why not just go to something different? Okay? Now, if the middle graders are struggling with comprehension, then I would go to the research on motivation. I would let them choose their own material. I would let them choose books with humor. I would let them record themselves. But before doing any of that, I would go back to this whole concept of what the purpose of language arts is. We have students who graduate from high school who cannot define social studies. They don't know what social studies are all about. They'll say, well, I think we read some history. And we experience the same thing with reading. We have students who are learning to read, but they're not really sure what it's all about. They might say, well, I don't like to read books, so I don't want to learn to read. But when they understand that reading is all about communication and it's a way of sharing our thoughts with other people, then suddenly it has meaning for them. That, again, was a very brief, overly simplistic response. But if that person will email me, I will be glad to share more.
Wonderful. And if anybody wants any additional information, we've got some more questions that have come in, but if anybody still has questions, please go ahead and forward them to questions@ahaprocess.com, and I will make sure that Bethany gets all of your emails. The next question is there a limitation on how old a child needs to be to learn the sign language?
Thank you for that question, and I can unequivocally respond with no, and I'll share my personal experience. My mother never went to school and didn't learn to read, so when I tutored my three-year-old niece, and I do start with three-year-olds if they are ready to learn to read, I start teaching them the signs. I tutored my three-year-old niece in the same room where my mother was, and she watched. And Mom, who had really learned very little about reading, began to read the newspaper. She could read the headlines. She then started writing her own checks. And by the way, the signs do carry over into writing very quickly, and that happened for her as well. And a few years ago, when I was working with my niece, I asked Mom what she wanted for Christmas. Mom said she wanted a computer so that she could surf the net. And Mom was 73 years old at the time.
That's wonderful.
So age is totally irrelevant.
So it obviously works at all and both ends of the spectrum.
It does. And what I do is I will find out if a person can already read a word such as stipulation. If a person can look at the word stipulation and say, oh, that word stipulation, then decoding is not their problem. Their problem might be in the area of comprehension. So I pull in the experts in comprehension. But if they can't decode the word stipulation, for example, regardless of their age, then the signing strategy can help them.
Okay, we've got another question here that relates to older students. The question is, could Bethany give a little insight on how to work with college students, young and older, who are struggling readers? At this university, we work with students who are under-resourced and who struggle with reading and did not have help with this issue at the K-12 level. We are working on setting up a system to increase their reading level.
That's an excellent question, and I know I'm sounding very repetitive, this sounds redundant, but I have used the decoding strategy, my signing strategy, with college students. I've worked with students who were non-readers for the most part. In fact, we know that there are students in high school who, for whatever reason, are able to pass their courses without really knowing how to read. But then when they get into college, that can't happen anymore. They have to know how to read. And we are seeing more and more of these students every year. Now, what I did at Averett was to start a reading class. And we didn't try to hide it from the students. We simply said, you know what? Some of you did not have not yet learned how to read well enough to be able to comprehend your text. And that's okay. If you're willing to try to help yourself, we're willing to help you. We didn't try to cloak it in any club or anything. And our classes were full every semester. But again, that is the decoding part of it. Now, one other thing that we must do at the college level is to talk to instructors about the fact that some of our students don't know what we're talking about. You could give them the social studies example. We use vocabulary that they simply don't understand. Something else that we need to do is to hire students to read and record the textbooks. Now, this is not to give our college students a way out, but it is giving them a way to hear the language in their ears. Some of our under-resourced students are coming to college never having heard some of these words that are in our textbook. I'll share with you my own personal example of vocabulary. Coming from a background of poverty, I remember being at graduation and sitting in the auditorium and hearing the names called. And my peers would go up one at a time and get their diploma. And I remember thinking, I didn't know so many people had the same name. And then I thought, my 4 years here, I've never even met anybody whose last name was cum laude. But see, I didn't know what that was all about. All of this vocabulary was totally new to me. and much of the vocabulary in the college text are simply new to our students. And if we simply have someone record the text and require the students to listen to the text, then it becomes part of their of what they hear. They start to feel comfortable with the words. That sounds like we're spoon-feeding them, I know, but we are. But the reality is that some of our adequately mediated students were simply spoon-fed at an earlier age. That's the only difference.
Excuse me. That's great to remember. The spoon-feeding happens at different times.
It does.
We've got two more questions.
Okay.
One is there a place we can access the signs? I know the workshop is recommended, but that won't be out, won't be occurring this year for us.
Thank you for that question. All of the signs are in a manual. The manual, Dr. Payne really does try to keep the cost of materials down. I should know the exact cost of that manual. Stephanie, forgive me, I don't. But I'm guessing 45, something like that. And all of the signs are graphically included in the manual, and there is a DVD in the back which has snippets from a workshop. So if you can't attend the workshop, then you will at least see parts of a workshop and all of the signs that are there in the manual. And one, there are certain key points that the manual can't make, and I'll make one of the most crucial ones. The signs don't only help students to remember letter sound associations, but they can help students to blend sounds into words. If I sign the letter M, and then I sign the letter E, and then I blend the two signs together, the children, the reader, has read a word. And I focus on words and signing words. I teach the signs in the context of a word from day one. I know we have another question, so with 3 minutes left, I'll stop so you can ask the last one.
Okay, well, I can tell everyone that Bethany's books and other products are on our website at www.ahaprocess.com. Just go to our store, and under reading, you'll see, and she's got her Reading by Age 5, which is $39, and the Tucker Signing Strategies for Kids. We've got the reference cards, and we've got the DVD, and we've got the books and everything, and it's all under $40, so. And the Tucker Signing Strategies for Reading, the manual plus the DVD, is $58.50. So,
thank you, Stephanie.
There's that answer in a, yeah. The second question is, it sounds as though you're using pairing of differently abled students a lot. Although we concur that this is a good strategy for youth sometimes, we recognize our need to help every child improve. What do we say to parents of the stronger students who are constantly put in the teaching position?
That's a really, really good question. And I have tried to be extremely cautious in the selection of the activities. You'll notice that I didn't say pair children to read whole text, because I agree that is actually using your more advanced reader as a teacher, and that's not what they're in school for. They're in school to make progress on their own. The only time I pair them were for games such as bingo, so that they're actually looking for the word. But it doesn't matter whether they're looking for the word on their own card or someone else's card. This is reinforcing that word in their minds. And when we engage the students in activities such as this, we would have words that challenge your advanced reader. We're not dealing with easy words that are too easy for them. We're calling out words that challenge your advanced reader. Then your advanced reader benefits from seeing this word on his or her card. They also benefit from finding it on the other child's card. As I read strategies pulling this teleconference together, I eliminated hundreds of strategies because they were doing exactly what you're asking about. They were using the more advanced readers, and that's not what they're in school for. They're in school to be challenged, and thank you for making that point. And again, when we select pairing strategies and games for students, we must make sure that everybody benefits, not just the struggling reader.
Wonderful. Well, it is exactly right on the nose of the hour. And Bethany, I think we've squeezed everything out of you that we possibly could in 1 hour. And thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge with us. This has been terrifically helpful. I know that we've gotten lots of thank you emails already for you and your time and your information. So thank you. And thank you to everyone who attended. And as I said, if any of the attendees would like more information, please do continue to email us at questions@ahaprocess.com, or you can always call the office at 800-424-9484, and we will be happy to help you in any way. And with that, I hope that you can all join us for our teleseminar next month. All of you are on our email list, so you will be getting more information about that. And we look forward to being together again. Thank you, Bethany, and thank you to the audience.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.